State College. Originally, I grew up in Southern California. Lived in Van Nuys for a little bit, and then Palmdale, which was a nice little desert oasis for out in the middle of Southern California. Lived there until I was 18 years old, and then decided to join the military, joined the Air Force right out of high school. I was actually just 17 years old, so I had to get a waiver from my parents letting me join. And then spent a good 20 years in the military and got stationed here. My last assignment was here at Joint Base Lewis-McChord when I retired of 20 years, and been living here in Olympia for just over 4 years now. Oh, man. I've been wanting to join the military, be in the military since I was probably about 9-10 years old. I was one of those cliche kids. I saw Top Gun and I saw those planes fly, and I was like, man, that's what I want to do. And when I was old enough, I went and talked to the Air Force recruiter. And though I didn't get to be a pilot, I did join the Air Force. I was around a lot of planes and got to enjoy it. My job in the Air Force was definitely wasn't flying. Like I said, I was a 2T1 ground transportation vehicle operator, actually. And so I got trained on how to drive heavy equipment. So anything from a regular pickup truck to forklifts, wreckers, tow trucks, and 18-wheelers. Well, funny stories about the Air Force. I guess you can ask anybody from another branch of service, and you know, just mentioning the Air Force, that's funny in itself. But, there's always a funny story in the Air Force. I think one of the most recent hysterical memories I have was when I was down in Texas. I was a military training leader, and that's one of the guys. That was a special duty assignment, and I'm kind of like a drill instructor, but after basic training. And we had some interesting students that would flow through there, through the pipeline. But we had this one kid. He was so disgruntled. He got kicked out. But he was so disgruntled with the military because, he was a douchebag and didn't need to be in the military, period. But he took it to heart. And when he got kicked out of the Air Force, he decided to take a shit in a shoebox, package it up, and then mailed it to the commander of the training base. And he was dumb enough to actually put his return address on there too, so that's how we knew who it was. And so we actually were able to get him recalled back to the base, and he, as a civilian, had to come in and got prosecuted on charges for for that kind of crap, literally. Honestly, it turned into like a civil case, and that was at the tail end of my tour there, so I don't know what came of it, but they brought him in. He was detained and held on base for, I think he was somewhere around 2 months, and I can't remember everything that happened to him, but I just know they brought him in. They had the police department from the town come in, and they brought him in. But it was just one of those things where it's like, why would you do that? I mean, you're got kicked out of the Air Force, and then you're gonna go and do something like that because you're disgruntled, like, right, you know, sending shit to a commander. You know, I enjoyed it. I will say the first 15 years in were amazing. I had such an awesome career. Yeah, even though it wasn't the greatest of jobs, but I still had a great career. Traveled all over the place. I was stationed in Florida, Korea, Italy. Traveled all over Europe when I was stationed in Italy. So it was really an amazing time. Last 5 years, though, I don't know. I guess it's just, you kind of see the end of the the light at the end of the tunnel of a career. And I don't know if I started becoming one of those disgruntled NCOs and was always pissy, or I just started seeing the military in a whole different light. After 10 years of being where we're at war, you just start seeing the quality of life in people. It goes down, and you know, work ethics are kind of not really there. You know, leadership always trying to tell you, oh, you need to do this, you know, you have all these certain steps you need to follow. But, you know, no one really seemed to care about the individuals. They were only out for themselves. And that always kind of struck a bad chord in my mind. And so, yeah, you know, so many years of being at war and seeing just how it wears on people, just wears you down too. And like I said, the last 5 years, I was burnt out. And then really when I was down in Texas as a MTL, I got to see a whole different side of the Air Force and the training aspect. And I don't know, didn't really sit well. A lot of the stuff that happened down there it's not what I imagined the military to be a part of. You know, I saw a lot of stuff get swept under the rug and some really bad people that shouldn't have been in the military get pushed through, and some really good kids that could have had a real bright future had one incident, and because someone in leadership didn't like them, they got kicked out. So, you know, he said the kid with the took a crap in a shoebox. I mean, he had such a past within 5 months of going through training. You know, he didn't need to be there, but you know, we had a girl that was dealing drugs right out of the dorm room, and they almost, I mean, even though she got caught, she almost got the opportunity to pass through and get swept and go out operational. But it was a point where, like, leadership was actually begging and pleading with her to just stop doing drugs and we'll kind of subside it, because she was really good in class. But like, I don't know, you see that kind of stuff, and someone doing drugs just need to be out of the military. It was a female student. There wasn't very many of them, so they wanted to try to get her through, and she was Hispanic descent. And I mean, they tried to push female students and anybody of an ethnic descent through and get them operational as fast as possible. And it was like, there was actually a quota. A friend of mine who was a recruiter was telling me there's quotas based on different ethnicities that they have to make. And as a recruiter, they're all worth certain points. So, you know, they make it through basic training in tech school, that recruiter kind of gets extra kudos. Oh, during time of war, like I said, my first time ever deploying overseas was in 1996. I went to Saudi Arabia. And when I first joined the military, going to war was never really it was one of those you knew it was a possibility, but you never really thought about it. And in 96, I was over in Saudi Arabia. And it's when the Khobar Towers were blown up, and I was there for that. And that was one of those, like, holy crap, you know, that really just happened. You know, we never thought there was a threat, even though we were in the Middle East, never thought really of a threat to us. And so that was kind of an eye-opening experience, just having a bomb go off 3 buildings away from where I was sleeping. And then as time went on, you know, 2011 came around, and I had just came back from another deployment in Saudi Arabia and landed back at my home station when the Twin Towers were attacked. And I was immediately notified, don't unpack, you're probably going to go right back over to where you came from, which I ended up going right back to Kuwait and started the build-up process of the waves. So, yeah, the whole build-up being part of a going to war, you know, you think it's never something you really think about until it happens, and then when you're actually in it, I don't know, first time you're exposed to a bomb or someone shooting at you, not really sure what's going on. You know, it's like an out-of-body experience. At least it was for me. Just, I didn't really know how to explain it. I went cold, everything surrounding me it was like slow motion. You know, you're not really sure how to process what's going on. And so, yeah, you take a minute and you start collecting your own thoughts before you get back into what's going on around you. And then from there, you just kind of react almost, you know, react to what's going on, or react to the situation around you and make sure you do the best to survive and take care of the people next to you. For my family, well, for my wife, she was with me through all of my deployments. And I mean, she was very supportive. She always was very, she never let on that she felt there was anything wrong. She never felt like I was ever in danger. And I always made sure that when I talked to her, you know, I relayed that, hey, I'm good, everything's good. And kind of reassured her that I was doing everything I could to take care of myself. And I never would tell her if something happened. I never really relayed that message to her because I didn't want her to worry about it. I wanted her to think that everything was okay. And maybe that's good or bad, I don't know, but that's what I did. And I just wanted her to just be reassured. So when I did come home, you know, it was just kind of a sigh of relief for her that, okay, you're safe, you're home. Oh, the world's good again. For my daughters, the first deployment, they were too young to even remember. They don't remember, but as they got older, when I'd go on more deployments, it got harder. My youngest daughter especially, it was really hard for her. She never knew how to take it. Whenever I would talk to her, those were emotional phone calls. she always would cry and tell me how much she missed me and everything. And when I would come home, actually my last deployment in 2013, I was coming up the escalator. You know, she knew that was the last deployment, that Daddy was going nowhere from this point forward. She literally, jumped. As I'm coming up the escalator, she jumped down into my arms and just, you know, at the time she was only 6 years old, for a six-year-old to realize and understand that, okay, my dad's home and he's home for good. To feel her shake and cry and, you know, it's like she knew. She watched the news. We always tried to keep that stuff off the TV, what was going on there, but it's like she always knew that okay, my dad's going to the Middle East, that something could happen where he's not going to come back. And so for her to be so excited that I was home for the last time, it's a good feeling. Coming to Evergreen, I knew when my military career was over, I wanted to go to school. And I looked at different schools all around the area, specifically in the programs, the audio programs. And I knew traveling to Seattle was out of the question. There was no way I was going to even attempt that living down here in Olympia. So I looked around, and the other schools really didn't have what I was looking for. And so I checked out Evergreen, and it was just a perfect match. It was a 15-minute commute. It had everything that I was wanting as far as course studies were concerned. So yeah, it was just everything I wanted, that I want to learn, is right here in my back door. So yeah, jumped at the chance to go to Evergreen. You know, I never heard anything about the culture of Evergreen until after I enrolled. And I was so excited, you know, fresh out of the military, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going back to school. You know, this is gonna be awkward, but you know, whatever. And, but yeah, someone was always like, oh, you enrolled into Evergreen. Don't you know about the greeners? You know, quote unquote greeners. No, man, I've never heard of it. What's a greener? And so, yeah, I started hearing all the stories of, oh, you know, you coming from the military, you're going to Evergreen, they're not going to like you. It's a hippie school. It's this kind of school, very liberal. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess it's one way to find out. I'm just going to show up on campus and see how it goes. And everything I was told about Evergreen, I've never experienced it. I mean, as far as being treated differently for being in the military. But everything I've seen, it's college. I mean, whether it's Evergreen or a major state college up in, you know, UW or whatever, it's, people are gonna be people. They're gonna start experimenting differently. They're not at home. They're away from mom and dad, probably for the first time. And so, and I think being in the military for so long and seeing all these young kids coming into the military straight out of high school and how they evolve into becoming the adults they are, seeing it in, at a college level, it's really no different, you know. It completely readied me for college. The only difference here is people have more hair than we did in the military, you know. It's like anything, it's like getting a whole new, it's like PCSing, getting a new assignment. You know, you show up at a base, you're gonna hear good things, you're gonna hear bad things. You just need to show up, be open to the new surroundings, and make your own decision and make your own, that's the word I'm looking for. Just make it your own experience. Don't let anybody else tell you that Evergreen is good or bad. You know, you're gonna figure it out for yourself. I will say that it's definitely different than any other college experience. It's not a normal school. And I think that's what makes Evergreen so great, is you get to manage your own life. It's not set in stone that you have to take XYZ courses. If something interests you and they have it here at Evergreen, take the class. You know, just, I would say, be cautious on how you navigate the system. Don't take too many of your typical Evergreen schools, because when you do get your degree, you have to make sure that degree is specialized somewhere, generalized somewhere, so you can get a good career afterwards.